Hello and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg, and you've seen the headlines on biznews.com, watched and listened to the interviews on BizNews TV and BizNews Radio. So now let's talk about what the latest developments mean for you. This is the Editor's Desk, exclusive analysis for BizNews Premium members. Today is Tuesday, the 6th of January, 2026. I'm glad to have you with me. Well, we might only be two working days into our new year. At BizNews, we seem to get back in office before most in the media industry. But we've got some pretty hot stuff for you, and you can go along to the website and read them today. Just to give you some insight on three of those stories, there is a piece from The Economist which is talking about Iran. Now, you may recall that while most of us were on leave and otherwise occupied, the South African government put its navy, or such that it is, into military exercise with the Chinese, Russian, and Iranian navies, or at least ships of theirs. And, well, apart from being fairly embarrassing at what our turnout was, the fact that Iran is now being drawn that close from a military perspective means we better be paying more and more attention. It's not that long ago that Donald Trump, through the American Air Force, into a direct attack on Iran, and Netanyahu has been threatening for some days now that as Iran is rebuilding its ballistic missile capabilities, Israel is ready to strike again. So a war between Iran and the United States has been predicted quite widely, and we in South Africa appear to be allies, a little bit like, well, maybe what the Turks felt like in the First World War with the Germans, or indeed what the Austrians felt when the Second World War came along and they were part of the Nazi machine. We might end up as on the wrong side of history here. Well, I suppose they would be saying on the right side of history. Anyway, it's important to pay attention to this. And The Economist is today reporting, and we have this piece from our partners on BizNews today, about the unrest that is occurring in Iran. It started off on the 28th of December, so preceded the strike in Venezuela, and it began a little bit like Arab Spring, nothing to do with political, but all to do with economics. Electronics vendors, guys who sell phones and computers and so on in Tehran, went on strike. And their strike was based on the fact that it's almost impossible for them now to do business because a 40% inflation rate and a similar decline in the currency since June last year, it's down by almost half, means that by the time what they buy and bring into the country, when they get ready to sell it, they're outpriced. And it is impossible for them to pass on those kind of increases. So they went on strike, and that was bad enough. But then merchants in Tehran's Grand Bazaar, this is well known within Iran as being the temperature gauge of public opinion, they joined them, and they kicked off what has now been nationwide protests that forced the Iranian regime to shut down schools and offices in 21 of the 31 provinces in the country. It's a reminder to all of us that in 2022, only 3 years ago, a young woman who didn't put on her headgear or didn't cover her hair was arrested by the regime, and she died in police custody. The result of that were the 2022 riots. Well, since then, the Iranian regime has stopped the enforcement of wearing of hijabs, but it remains illegal in that country. Currency down 40%, as mentioned earlier. Inflation over 40% at the moment. The chronic energy and water shortages, rolling blackouts. Well, if you can think of what South Africa had with our Eskom story 235 days ago, well, in Iran, that's even worse and commonplace. Tehran is in a situation now where it is a powder keg waiting for something to happen, and the latest developments or the latest riots there, and you can see the pictures there, many thousands of people who've taken to the streets, it was just really the spark that was needed, came from a very unlikely source, those merchants in Tehran. But what does make this story dangerous, as The Economist tells us, is that you've got Netanyahu on the one hand and you've got Donald Trump. And Donald Trump's now clearly feeling his oats after what happened in Venezuela. And he has been warning that if Iran shoots any of these what he calls peaceful demonstrators, then America will come to their aid. The fact is, a number of these demonstrators have already been shot and killed. So it'll be interesting to see how that's going to develop. I would also point you to this morning's Daybreak, BizNews Daybreak, where we took a little clip under fair usage license of the great historian Niall Ferguson, who reminded us that in November last year, there was a Trump corollary that was issued to the national security laws in America. And this one essentially said that America was able, legally, to enforce the Monroe Doctrine. And Niall Ferguson said if you'd listened, you would have known that what happened in Venezuela was just around the corner. It didn't happen immediately. It happened at the time and in the time that the Americans felt it was most appropriate. What's going on in Iran right now has to give us all pause. The second story that I'd like to refer you to is something that is quite personal for me. I've been to 19 editions of the World Economic Forum in Davos, and that's a fantastic privilege to have attended them. But this year, I wasn't just dropped as a participant. I was dropped completely, even from the media schedule. So we weren't allowed to go along and cover it as media in BizNews, which is, it's like, hang on, there's something more at foot here. I'm of the understanding that I've been cancelled and there are new owners or new movers at the World Economic Forum, and they've got different priorities perhaps to those who had it in the past, but whatever. And that was fine. But now I'm grumpy today, and the reason for that is that Donald Trump is going to be in Davos for the first time in 6 years, and the Americans are going to make quite a statement. There's a piece from our partners at the Financial Times, which is on BizNews today, which says that US corporations are now starting to pony up proper money for the Davos hub for Donald Trump and his administration. Millions of dollars are going into it. And the idea is to give the Americans a very strong presence when their big boss is there. Interestingly enough, the two names that are mentioned by the FT are Microsoft and McKinsey, companies well known in South Africa. The one, for good reason, I guess, Microsoft, after all, was the company that Nteto Nyati, one of our top business leaders, ran for a few years. And the other, really not liked, and that's McKinsey, which was used by the Guptas and their cohorts to pillage our national treasury. And that is a name that I guess no South African today would be feeling terribly warm towards. But the Americans are different, of course. But it is interesting that Microsoft, this is the home of Bill Gates, after all. Bill Gates, the man who occupies high esteem in Davos, but Microsoft supporting Trump, as is McKinsey, which is a bit more predictable. So all of these things are really interesting. We will have a strong South African delegation, as per usual, led by Cyril Ramaphosa. And on the one hand, you got Donald Trump. The last time he attended, I was there, and he really was the main event. It was also at a time when he hadn't really shaken up the world, certainly nothing like the extent that he's done now. So it's a bit sad that I, you know, personally speaking, that I won't be there. But never fear, we have Bloomberg, we have the FT, and we have The Economist with big delegations. So our tribe will not be at any disadvantage whatsoever. We will be covering the event as we always have done in the past. But my goodness, would I love to be a fly on the wall and to see how the ANC government or ANC-led government reacts when the Americans are around, and how the organizations and will be engaging with each other. Who knows? Maybe Davos is going to see a breaking in the ice flows between the two nations, because right now things really aren't very good. I've written a piece on this on BizNews this morning, where I picked up the statements from Durko, which call it the ANC, and the MK party, and the EFF, in reaction to what happened in Venezuela. And they're very predictable, but also they're a reminder that we do have in this country a majority of the politicians in parliament who are outraged by what's happened in Venezuela and are using arguments, on the one hand, legalistically, and that's pretty sensible from the ANC, and ideologically, which is not as sensible from MK party and the EFF, but their supporters couldn't really be bothered with that. But I just feel sometimes if only one could remind those supporters that Venezuela is producing one third of the oil that it produced before they nationalized those oil assets. There's outrage now because Donald Trump has taken the Chavista, the current Chavista leader who's been in power for 13 years, into custody. And there's all kinds of arguments to that, which I'm not qualified to get into. But what I would remind you of is that 18 years ago, his mentor, Chavez, nationalized $60 billion worth of assets, just took them over in one fell swoop. And there were a lot of American companies and other Western nation, companies as well. So those companies are now pretty keen to get back in there and to, get their assets back, no doubt, and those would be drilling licenses and so on, which were fairly acquired, one has to presume, and B, to start drilling oil, which made Venezuela the richest nation in South America. It's now one of the poorest, with 7 million of its people leaving. A little bit like Zimbabwe, actually, in many ways, in that Zimbabwe was the breadbasket of Africa. You had an ideologically driven political party, which then became very rapidly a criminal enterprise. There's no other way of describing Zimbabwe or Venezuela, that turned the wonderful, rich country into a disaster. Now, the interesting thing about Venezuela is during those years of great wealth for the nation, most of that came from the oil. There is this view or perception amongst the ignorant that when oil is being drilled, the only beneficiaries are the oil companies. That's not the case at all. The nation benefits by taking royalties and taxes. So what you should be doing as a nation is you should be getting international businesses to come in, make the investment, which you can't afford to do, and bring in the technology, which you don't possess, to exploit those resources and then drive that cash flow into your country and use that cash flow to develop other businesses, or at the very least, to give your people a better life. That gets lost in translation, though, somewhere when one goes through the socialist lens. Finally, a wonderful story from The Conversation, which is on BizNews today, about it comes from three academics in the United States, professors or associate professors from Yale University, the University of New York, and the University of Oklahoma, who have been in Malawi, and they're archaeologists who have discovered a funeral pyre, a crematorium to a degree, which is 9,500 years old, by far the oldest on the African continent. It's a really interesting piece, and one that shows, as we continuously tell people, those of us who live in this and love this part of the world, that this is where it all began. This is where civilization began. This is where the earliest developments of mankind occurred, here in Africa, and in particular in Southern Africa. It's a good piece, and one that I think will open quite a few eyes. Yeah, well, I'm going to leave it there for today. Keep an eye on your premium newsletter for links to our freshest published content. Thanks for trusting us with your time. I'm Alec Hogg. Until tomorrow, cheerio.